It became of Life Can Be Beautiful. I should begin this program by saying, come in, come in, the door is open. Wasn't that the opening?
Well, that sounds like the opening of almost any.
Yeah, I think actually, as far as Life Can Be Beautiful, the locale of which was called a Slightly Red Bookshop, mm-hmm. and it had a prop bell, which of course rang every time the door opened. Which it frequently did, because a lot of people came in and out of it during the course of some 14 years that it was on the air.
But then didn't Papa David say, come in, the door is open? Something to that effect?
He might have, I don't remember.
It wasn't a set opening, if that's what you mean.
Oh, no.
I seem to have remembered that. Anyway, my name is Richard Lamparsky. And the first voice you heard was that of Carl Eastman. Who played, I guess, from the beginning, didn't you, on Life Can Be Beautiful?
I was on from the very first day, and I played a character called Toby Nelson, who was always referred to as tough, young, lovable Toby Nelson, and I was 19 years old for 13 years.
Was he your boyfriend, Terry Keane?
No. Terry was Chi-Chi, who was the heroine, and I loved her with a great and unrequited passion for all
right.
those years.
That's the longest-lasting kind of relationship. We really loved each other.
How long were you Chi-Chi?
It must have been about 7 years, I think.
That's right.
About
I think you were on for about the last seven years.
And the actor who played Papa David, I think, has died.
Ralph Locke,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the most amazing thing because Ralph had cancer, which very few people knew, and he managed to kind of hold himself together, and 2 months after the show went off the air, he died.
That was very much his life, I think, the show. And it was like he gave up. I mean, I don't think he had anything more to do with him, he felt, with himself, you know. It's very
professionally,
sad.
Personally,
yeah.
And he had identified as people had a tendency to do with...
But up until then, he was a very strong man. How old was he?
Ralph was about 77 and looked about 42.
Yeah.
He ran the bookshop.
Yes.
He what would you
incredible.
Say the name of it was again?
The Slightly Red Bookshop, because it was a second-hand bookshop.
Yeah, this was before now, McCarthy era, I think, when they named it the Slightly Red Bookshop.
Yes.
R-E-A-D.
yes. And had certain kind of frightening connotations to which, of course, we paid no attention. Now, the show started, I think, in 1938 on, if you'll excuse the expression, Labor Day. And the original cast included Ralph, Alice Reinhardt, who was the original Chi-Chi, and John Holbrook, who played Stephen, who was a wheelchair cripple. I was her boyhood chum from the streets, and Paul Stewart played a character called Jip Mendoza. That was before your time, dear. And he was the first of quite a few menaces we had on the show who... included, among others, briefly, Frank Lovejoy, Dick Widmark.
I think Ed Begley played a role on that.
He played several.
Mm.
And Larry Blyden, who was still...
He was
Larry
when I was on. He played guitar and sang.
That's right.
Yes, he was a cowboy.
Did he sing the theme that Mr. Eastman was...
Oh, no. Nobody sang the theme. We wouldn't dare.
That was our organist.
And it was an original theme composed by the organist, whose name is Bill Meter.
I looked everywhere for it. I've got a pretty good collection of themes from the soap operas, and I really couldn't find it. I was very disappointed because I was going to begin with the music. It helps, I think, to get to the mood.
Now, if you like, I can really louse up this whole half hour by attempting to hum it.
Don't hold back.
In a laryngitic way.
Do.
Maybe a new hit record for you. Come on.
As well as I remember it, it went... You will forgive me. Da 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 da. And from there, I went into all kinds of minor.
That may be a new career for you, Mr. Eastman.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You've done practically everything, Carl. You might as well sing now.
Tell them what you're doing now. That'd be a surprise to a lot of people who remember you as an actor.
Well, it might conceivably be. A year from that, I went into producing and directing, and now I am almost the lowest of all mankind in the advertising industry. Slightly lower, I guess, than an account executive. I'm an agent.
But a top agent.
Thank you.
There's nothing
enough,
lower. I've been a press agent. That's the lowest.
Well, it's a toss-up. Actually, I don't have too many clients, which is from choice, but they include, speaking of old radio, some rather surprising people, including Mason Adams, who was Pepper Young.
He's been on this program.
He has,
yeah,
I'm
he
sure.
was on the Big Town
That's right.
program we did together.
And he was Pepper Young for some 14 years. Yeah. And Santos Ortega is a client of mine. Santos played Inspector Queen on the Ellery Queen show and is today a very beloved character called Grandpa on As the World Turns.
Mm-hmm. He was also on this program as Nero Wolfe.
That's correct.
With Archie.
And Larry Haynes is a client of mine who is now playing on Search for Tomorrow, another rather popular, if you'll excuse the expression, television show.
Well, he worked quite a bit because I tried to get him to do the program when we did a Gangbusters show. Because
used to be on Gangbusters
yes,
frequently.
Together, and we just couldn't get together. We tried a couple of times, so I finally got one. Fortunately, I got a show together on Gangbusters.
And I have fairly recently acquired another old friend and fellow radio actor by the name of Dane Clark.
No kidding, really?
Who was beginning to do commercials and very successfully.
Good.
Someone asked me about him not too long ago. I got a letter from California because this program's heard in California, asked me what he was doing, and I had heard that he was in England. Was he?
No, he was in Denmark making a film.
Oh.
He returned a couple of months ago and has recently come here from the coast and is about to acquire two very substantial commercial accounts, which I am not at liberty to discuss at the moment because they are...
Particularly on non-commercial radio.
Of course.
Well, I remember him very well from slapping around Betty Davis in one of those pictures.
That's right. That's right. He generally, unfortunately, played the guy who never got the gal, but in this particular case, he did.
How did you get the name of Chi-Chi? That name always intrigued me.
Well, now, that would have started, Carl, before I was on. I don't know. Was there any explanation of that? Or
it was supposed to have been a diminutive of something, but nobody ever knew what it was.
And Carol Conrad was your real name.
Yes.
And Toby, the character I played, always called her Cheech, which was diminutive.
How long since you have seen each other?
Well, we haven't seen each other. Well, sometimes we bump into each other, but the sad thing is that in the radio days, we used to see a great deal of each other because we would do several shows, you know, and we'd have coffee together, and it was really like a family. At least it was for me. I grew up in radio. And now that that's over with, it's very sad because we don't see each other as much as we would like to.
No, it was kind of a small town, and
yeah.
People generally gathered either at the Kaufman Bedrick drugstore at NBC
right.
or at Colby's in the CBS building.
That's
Colby's
right.
served alcoholic beverages, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Yes. I've had several stories in this program about people who stopped in between the two broadcasts for.
That was probably Hurley.
Well, that was over at NBC. But
no,
Colby's...
It wasn't. It was the one near
was it,
CBS.
Was it, oh, Colby.
Yeah, people,
well, then it was Colby.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's when we used to have to do live repeat shows for the coast, and sometimes they were a disaster.
We mentioned Bud Collier a minute ago. He had, according to my records, he played Logan Smith on LCBB.
He did briefly. Dick Calmer played a character called Barry Markham, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that. You really have a very good memory. I looked these things up, but you're going back. How many years has it been off the air?
Since 1953, I believe, wasn't it?
I think that sounds about right.
I know in 1951, when I worked for Benton, and I went to work as a producer for Benton and Bowles, which was producing the show, and obviously I couldn't be ambivalent, and I was at that time directing Perry Mason and Rosemary on radio, so they had to terminate my career as an actor, so they sent me off to Korea, and that was the end of Toby Nelson.
Your boyfriend went to war.
He was a tremendously important part of the show. We missed him very much.
Are there any other lead roles you played or running parts on any of the other old soap operas?
You did quite a few, I know, too.
Well, Life Can Be Beautiful was my first leading role. I'd played on all the soaps in running parts before that. After that, or during that, I played Hope on Big Sister.
She was a heavy.
She was a heavy.
Yeah.
And then I played Terry Burton on The Second Mrs. Burton.
Oh, well, that was the lead. Yeah, I remember the second Mrs. Yes. Burton. In fact, I think I have the music from that. If I'd known, I'd have brought it along.
I think maybe it was the last show to go off of the soaps, I think.
Oh, really?
We closed the whole thing.
And then you used to do a lot of things on Gangbusters and
yes,
the district attorney, as we all did.
It was kind of fun because on the nighttime shows, I could really play those marvelous ladies.
I was thinking of putting together a Mr. District Attorney show. Is Vicki Vola in town?
Oh, yes,
she is.
She was on the coast, I know.
Unhappily, Len Doyle is dead, and Ed Byron, who was the producer and director, is too.
Mm. Well, now, who played, though, Mr. District Attorney?
Because Jay Johnston, who is on the coast now.
He is? Because he was here a while ago. He played the judge on a television series that emanated from the coast.
That's right.
Was produced at Paramount Television because I worked on the Paramount lot of times.
And also, strangely enough, he, which most people didn't know, played the lead on the Parker Family. He played Mr. Parker, which was a comedy show in which Leon Janney played his son.
Yeah.
And Jay had a delightful sense of comedy, which you would never have suspected.
Because that voice was so pompous and serious.
And he did become, I must tell you, more and more identified with it. With Mr. District Attorney, and progressively through the years kept getting more and more square, which was kind of funny, you know, as time went on. As I said, this identification of, you never had it, Terry,
well,
God bless you, because...
Actually, go ahead if you're going to give me a compliment. Don't let me interrupt you.
No, you did Chi-Chi extraordinarily well, but it wasn't your life, and your predecessor, Alice Reinhardt, as was true of many... gals who played leads on the daytime serials would become so identified it was kind of frightening.
Did you ever have that problem? I mean, fighting identification like that? Were you ever conscious of it?
I never felt that way. I never had that happen to me. I also had a voice that was quite versatile, so that I could play many different things, and I didn't always sound the same. I could double and...
Because I think Ann Elsner truly believes that she is Stella Dallas. I won't argue with her.
I won't contradict you.
Well, I must tell you something rather coincidental. I was responsible for both Terry and Ann within the last year going up to Canada and appearing on a program called Flashback, which is kind of their answer to What's My Line.
A lot of the people who've been on this have told me about that program, Love and Abner, a lot of them.
Well, Terry went up as Chi-Chi on Life Can Be Beautiful, and then I suggested that Ann go up as Stella Dallas, and I must tell you, they were thrilled at CBC, just thrilled. Except that Anne was so much more thrilled, it was not to be believed, and she took the whole thing as if she were getting an Oscar. I've gotten reports that she got back from Toronto, and everybody was
hysterical.
The voice
was even lower than ever. Well.
Well, she's a woman of a very forceful personality. And,
yes,
and certainly
she's also
very...
a very successful restaurateur.
With good reason, and she has very good food.
Yes.
Yeah, we needn't plug the restaurant because it's it's in Lambertville, New Jersey.
Right.
It's right on the line.
And
it's
marvelous.
It is. It's very good.
And it's marvelous because when you can't get a drink in Pennsylvania on Sunday, you can go across the river and get one there.
And if you're anywhere within, I'd say, 50 miles of the area, you know where it is because there are signs that say Stella Dallas's, the River Edge Restaurant, not Ann Elsner's, Stella Dallas's. I asked her if she had permission from the author, and she said yes, she had, who was a good friend of hers. Oh, what was I going to ask next?
Well, I think Alice Frost was almost as bad as Big Sister, you know, with this kind of identification.
She was Mrs. North, wasn't she?
She also played Mrs. North, but mostly she was Big Sister, and she really was.
I think what happens, I was very lucky because Chi-Chi was pretty human type gal. She got angry, she got jealous, she got irritable, she got negative, too, besides being warm and lovable, and she was very human. So that
and
it
was a girl of the street, too.
That's right. And she didn't have to, you know, when you're a leading lady and you have to be noble all the time, I think that's a great strain to always be above, you know, always right and wonderful.
Yeah, I think without exception, Chi-Chi probably was the most interesting
lead
on any daytime show on the air, really, because she was fiery.
Yeah.
She had faults, none of which, of course, were anything except minor, but...
But you know, so few leading ladies were able to get mad or, you know, show any other kind of emotion besides
Helen Trent never
a
was.
Big heart, you know.
Oh, goodness,
she'd never raise her voice.
Mm-mm. No, I used to scream, yell, and cry, and...
Did Chi-Chi ever marry in the last episode? How did you wind it up?
There was one marriage, and when that was over with, there were no more.
No, as I recall, it took about 9 years to get you married to Stephen, and they got so much mail from irate listeners, they finally had to marry Chi-Chi and Stephen, which incidentally was the death of the show, and the authors knew it was going to be. As long as they could keep them apart by any number of devices, and there were thousands of them, everything was fine.
Yeah,
once they got married,
it was much more exciting than
yeah, it was a disaster. And then, if you remember, Stephen, who had been this character, you know, sans peur et sans reproche, who was the most marvelous man in the whole world, gradually turned into a deep-dyed villain. So they were finally able to get rid of him.
That's right. That's true. Now, as long as they could keep getting into scrapes with Chi-Chi and problems, it ties you down somewhat. If you marry such a character to somebody, then not so many things could happen.
I think as long as you were unmarried, it was the number one daytime show on the air. This is true.
Really?
And
mm-hmm.
once Stephen and Chi-Chi got married, it began a slow and gradual decline.
I must say, I guess they just held their breath and did it all in one day, didn't they? Kill him.
Yeah, they tried to kill him all.
I love the title. It had such a positive ring to it. Life can be beautiful.
Yes,
it's still used many, many times, I hear.
And, of course, this was always a prelude to the most ghastly combination of tragedies.
Followed by
having
a scream.
So I was going to say, the lady who lived across the street from us, Mrs. Music, used to say to my grandmother, as I listened to it, she'd say, how would that poor girl know life can be? She's had nothing but heartache since I've been listening to this.
With Mrs. Music?
Mrs. Music,
what
yes.
What a marvelous name.
Isn't she wonderful?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Ralph Edwards, who was the original announcer, incidentally, of Life Can Be Beautiful.
Ralph Edwards of Truth and Consequences.
That's right. And Ralph would give a rundown of the previous day's episode, which contained a number of tragic incidents, you know, and then the theme would come in again, and he'd say, and now life can be beautiful.
It was known as LCBB in
right.
the trade.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I got my first call, I had done, as I say, I'd done a lot of radio, but this was the first lead. But when I got my call to audition for it, they said very quickly on the survey, they said, LCBB. And I remember writing down ELSIEBEEBE. That was when I found out how wrong I was. I remember that audition so well. I wanted it so badly. And Alice Reinhardt was really marvelous. There was no doubt
about
it.
Yes, she was.
She was really marvelous. And I was a fan of hers. And I remember that she cried so well. And they did give me a crying scene for my audition. And
which you did very well, I might add.
And I was very happy. It was big. It was very flattering to be cast after her because she was so good.
Why did she leave?
That I don't know.
I think it was a combination of circumstances, mostly an incredibly miserable temperament on her part. And I think she would have reluctantly been fired, good as she was. But I think she kind of beat the producers to it and announced that she was leaving for California, which she did very strategically and just about on time.
Another of the big-name actresses who played on the program, according to my records here, was Agnes Moorhead, played Nellie Conrad. She must have been a relative of yours. That wasn't during your tenure, I take it.
She played... Oh, there was a whole thing about your real mother showing up, and Aggie played this ghastly character.
Yes,
yes. Remember, she was completely dishonest because there was a time when you were supposed to have become an heiress. Which never quite worked out, but I think that she played a very disreputable character.
Well, she'd be very good because she had that,
she was marvelous.
Bitchery in her voice. There was no one who could do it like she could.
Oh, yeah.
Fine radio actor.
She
radio,
was wickedness incarnate.
Now, you were brought up by Papa David? Was that the relationship?
You don't remember this because this is the first day. It started with Chi-Chi running into the store for protection because she was being pursued by Jip Mendoza, who was about to try to induce her into a life of, shall we say, shame. And Papa David took pity on Chi-Chi immediately, and she became his ward. And she, of course, immediately developed this tremendous antipathy to Stephen Hamilton, this brilliant young wheelchair attorney, because he was very intellectual, and he thought she was an intellectual slob. And, of course, everybody knew that eventually they would fall in love, but they resisted it for about 9 years, I guess.
Even that was, that's a marvelous combination, you know. He was so intellectual and so, you know, and she was just, you know, a rough, crude talk, whatever she wanted to say, whether it was the right English, he'd correct her. But it was interesting. It was fun. There was humor in it. There was pathos in it.
Actually, all the elements of soap opera, if you will, were there, and rather brilliantly. The show was sold to Procter & Gamble, incidentally, from a one-page analysis of the characters. There was never an audition of the script per se. There was never a script written until we went on the air. It was rather amazing. But Carl Bixby and Don Becker, who wrote it, described these main characters and their relationship to each other, and the rather obvious fact that if you put any two of them together in a scene, from it had to come drama. This is the essence of any good entertainment, irrespective of the medium. And Bill Ramsey, who at that time was head of programming at P&G, recognized this and bought the show from this one page.
It's strange, right. You know. I'm sure what you say is true, because when I look back now on radio, I can remember very few episodes, practically none,
well,
on the soap operas.
Well, Dick and Spade certainly was an example
of that, but
the characters
are
so
strong.
They all had to play off against each other.
I can remember the voices and the way they lived and how they lived and the personalities, but just say you don't really remember the episodes, a few.
See, because so frequently somebody would present a story and sell it as a show. Well, now, the particular storyline might have been rather interesting, but what do you do after about 32 weeks? Here they had to me, the very essence of any good entertainment, which is characters who have got to play off against each other, which they all did beautifully and always, because there was inherent conflict between any two of them at any time.
Now, you're still acting, Terry King. I didn't ask you what you were doing, but
I went from radio to television. I was very happy that I made the transition easily, because I'm very lucky. I have a photographic memory, which has nothing to do with talent. That's just luck. And I did quite a few shows, and I was on As the World Turns for 3 years, and I'm now in my fourth year on Edge of Night. But the thing I love is the loyalty of people. I have letters still from people who used to write to me when I was on Life Can Be Beautiful, and write to me and say, we loved you on that, and we're so glad that you're on this, you know. One lady said I was in the bedroom making up the bed, and my television was on, and Edge of Night was on, and I heard that voice, and I said, that's Chi-Chi. And I figured that's a lot of years, you know, for a voice to remain in somebody's mind. And, of course, that's the thing that radio had that television doesn't have. I think there was much more participation with the audience. They their ear got so keen, and they painted their own picture of what you looked like so that could be as satisfying as they wanted, you know. There isn't that much participation on television. They got to take what they get, you know.
How do the characters and the stories compare to the old soaps, the radio soaps? You can make that evaluation. I never watched television during the day, so I don't know.
You're pretty much the same, don't you, Terry, in essence?
Yes. I suppose, of course, there isn't as much dialogue always necessary because they can see you going to the door and opening the door. And
are the characters as strong?
I have a feeling that sometimes it gets that it's not so strong because they maybe rely on type and the looks of people a little too much and don't write as strong as they might.
And if either of you has read, if you'll excuse the expression, Marshall McLuhan, he refers to radio as a visual medium, which is rather interesting.
Well,
and it's true because
it
requires so much more imagination and cooperation, and the audiences were able to imagine the people rather than to see them per se. And, mm-hmm. and as a result, I think that radio had a great deal more to offer in many areas as far as imagination is concerned.
When I interviewed Virginia Payne, who is, I think, the first of the soap opera queens that I had on this program.
Lovely
this was about
a darling woman.
Nearly 2 years ago when she was on, and a fine actress, too. Mm-hmm. She's down in Houston now, I guess, the Alley Theater.
Yes.
Quite
mm-hmm.
happy.
Beautiful work.
And she said, you know, it's funny, but we remember they used to say, listen, look at the radio, look and listen, because we used to listen to the radio and look at it. And I always did. Of course, I was a kid then. But we always sat and looked at it. And as a matter of fact, you would never listen to it in the other room if you could avoid it. Because I always wanted to be in the same room and watch
it. Yeah.
It's funny.
Because a lot of ironing goes on during television, and I don't think it went on during radio.
Well, I think radio really demanded more attention, and I think more cooperation.
Yes, I think one of the reasons that many of the soap operas, for instance, were broadcast twice a day, was that if you did your washing in the morning or your shopping in the morning, you could hear it in the afternoon. And Ma Perkins was one. I don't know if you... LCBB was twice a day, but Ma Perkins was one. And Vic and Sade was another.
Yeah.
But in the Midwest, you could hear it in the morning or the afternoon. You can't get much more popular than that.
No.
No, and of course, there was a degree of what we hoped was anonymity in radio, except that, as Terry said, people recognized you immediately. I fondly imagined I was a good character actor. And I did Dick Tracy's assistant on the show,
Patton.
Pat Patton, with complete with brogue and everything. And I'd get letters from people saying, oh, now I hear you on Dick. And they destroyed any kind of ego I might have had in that particular area.
Well, Terry Keene is still working in television. Do you miss radio? Because you're not acting at all anymore, Mr. Eastman.
Yes, I do. I guess, I come in between two pieces of rye bread just enough to miss appearing as a performer. But the other has certain compensations in that, to a degree, it can be creative. Incidentally, and apropos of nothing except daytime radio, I am one of the loveliest things in retrospect that ever happened to me was when I was directing Rosemary, and Elaine Carrington wanted me to audition a young actor to come in and play a romantic lead. And I heard him, and I suspected he might become a pretty good actor, but he certainly was no romantic lead, and I insisted, and Elaine Carrington was kind of a legend. I said, Elaine, I'm just not going to use him. He's a lousy juvenile, and his name was Jason Robards.
Nah.
And he was a lousy juvenile. He's a very good character actor.
He was always a character actor.
Have you ever told him this story?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's lovely.
Well, now he can laugh.
Yeah. All the way to the bank.
Well, this has been great fun. I'm afraid we're out of time now, so I'm going to have to say thank you and goodbye to Terry Keene, Chi-Chi, and Carl Eastman, both very well-remembered actor and actress from Life Can Be Beautiful, one of the my favorite soap operas from the golden days of radio. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
About a year and a half ago, I visited with the first great Gildersleeve from the radio series of the same name. His name was Hal Perry. And at the time of the program, he discussed the great controversy when the role was changed. He left the part of the great Gildersleeve because of a controversy he had with the agency that owned the program. And they took Willard Waterman, who was quite a well-known actor at the time, and Mr. Waterman continued in the radio series and also acted the Great Gildersleeve on television. So next week we'll do whatever became of the Great Gildersleeve the second, because Willard Waterman will be here talking with me, and part of the program will be an excerpt from an original Fibber McGee and Molly program. So until next week at the same time, this is Richard Lamparski. Thank you for listening. And good night.
This is WBAI, listener-supported radio in New York City at 99.5 FM.